Hey, everybody. Before we start the episode today, I want to put out a public announcement. I don't know if you want to call this a safety announcement or just an important product fraud announcement. I don't know how we want to say it. But if you go to Amazon right now, or at least at the time of recording, you can find an RPG on there, a print copy of an RPG, and it's called Savage Swords and Sorcery. And it says it's by Zeb Cook. And it's the old Zephyr system, Z-E-R-F, or Z-E-R-S. And it's basically his old TSR Conan game with Conan stripped out. It's got a foreword by Jason Vey on there. It looks all professional, but it's not approved. It's unauthorized. Zeb Cook has been contacted and has said that it is not authorized, that somebody has posted it without his permission. And you know, he's not getting any royalties or anything from it. Somebody's just trying to make money off his work. So I would recommend you do not buy that product off Amazon. Now, you can get, and actually all it is, it's stolen from Jason Vey's website, from the Gray Elf website. If you go to Jason Vey's website, you can pick up this exact same PDF for free. It's out there, you know, and you can, there's also a website to go get Zephyr, or yeah, Zephyrs, however you say it, to get this off of. There's a Google site you can get it. It's up on the internet for free, but this guy just trying to cash in on it, whoever put it up on Amazon, don't buy the Amazon copy. Go get it off Gray Elf or get it off the other site. I'll put links in the show notes. I won't put links to the Amazon page in show notes, but I just want to put that warning out there so folks aren't, you know, contributing to this unauthorized edition where the author's not getting any money for it.
Apart from something beer or a cold libation, let me tell you how I wrote this little theme. I went and took a call from brother Jason, and he tells me that he has a little dream. He says he needs a backwards intro to begin his podcast, and I ask him, what you got? He said, I'll start off with some talking and some moody clips and popcorn fighting fantasy explorations and some groundless exploitation. Kickstarts that I'm watching and some blind unboxing, full month horror movie marathon. Sometimes I let the dogs come on, contest and the push. You know it's all about games. That's a slogan, let's just start with the name. It's the Nerds RPG Variety Podcast with the other Jason.
Welcome back to the Nerds RPG Variety Cast. I'm your host, Jason. I'm glad you're here today. I've got a fun show for you. I have an interview with Kane of Kane's Kiln. You might follow his blog. You might watch his YouTube channel. He is into ICRPG and is coming on to talk to us about it. So that's going to be the first thing we have. After that, I'm going to field a couple calls, and I'm going to talk about the movies I've watched for Scary Movie Month. So let's get into it. Okay, folks, today I've got a special interview for you. I have another media baron for you, as we know him here in the Anchor Sphere. So I have a guest. I have the man behind Kane's Kiln. How are you doing today?
I'm doing pretty good. Just finished up work and happy to chat.
Excellent. Excellent. So when I say media empire, we have some podcasters that also do YouTube, or they also do a blog, or maybe they sell things on Drive Through RPG, and you do all those. Well, maybe not podcasts, but you have a YouTube and a blog, and you have stuff for sale.
I do. YouTube has been a fun thing I've been doing for a little bit. I'm a web guy, so I just kicked up a blog. That's where I feel comfortable. And then I'm dabbling with stuff on Drive Through. Nothing for sale. Everything's for free there so far.
Okay. I apologize for that then. Yep.
Oh, no, you're good. I'm just more interested in dabbling and trying things out and getting a feel for things as it progresses.
Well, and that's the great thing. And that's, and so folks, this is going to be an ICRPG heavy interview. We'll probably touch on other stuff, but you know, that's where ICRPG shines, that DIY attitude, right? Just make it your own and dabble and experiment. And I think that's where, you know, Hankern really knocked it out of the park.
Well, and I mean, I completely agree. And that's where I kind of got my start, is this whole effort to do Kane's Kiln and create this stuff started because Hank's attitude is always, don't just talk about it and wish that someone else like Hank would do it. Go and do it yourself. And so, you know, if people wanted videos about ICRPG like I did, why should I wait for Hank to do it? I can do it. I'll do it. I'll share what I'm doing. If I need a resource, why can't I make it? Why can't I do an article? You know, things like that. And I've really adapted that as my own personal approach to this kind of stuff. So I love everything that Hank does, but he's doing such great, amazing stuff on his own. Like, I'm going to do my thing and let him do his thing. And I'm just going to enjoy the benefits of both.
Definitely. And I think that's what he's looking for. I mean, he's trying to be out there as an encouragement. He doesn't expect mindless followers. The idea is, you know, take it and run with it and and do your own stuff. Yeah. So yeah, and you've grabbed that, which is great. I really love it. There's going to be links to your YouTube and to your website and all that stuff in the show notes. So perfect. So we won't necessarily, and actually it looks like your website has links to everything. So maybe I'll just link your website.
Yeah. Websites are my bread and butter. So I tried to be as helpful there as possible.
No, it's really well laid out. I've got it pulled up now, and it looks great. So let's turn the clock back a little bit. What was your entrance to RPGs, to the hobby?
Well, thinking back, I started in high school when a friend of mine in my fencing club just invited me to questing. He just said, "Hey, come over. We do questing every Tuesdays. Come and play." And so I'm like, "That sounds like fun." And I jumped in, and he runs a homebrew system that he's been running for 10 years, 20 years, like 20 years now. But I got started in his homebrew system and played that for a year or two, and then kind of branched off, tried to do my own stuff, and it's kind of led its way here. So started with homebrew.
That's great. Yeah, I have a much more mundane story. You know, I started with the red box, with D&D back in the 80s, and went from there. But I've dabbled a little bit with homebrew stuff myself, but not to the extent you have here. But yeah, fencing. A buddy of mine, when I was stationed in Fort Lewis, we bought some used fencing gear and played with it. That's my extent of fencing experience. But
yeah, no, that's kind of that was my main hobby for, or it still is my main hobby. I've been doing it for about 14 years. So every week I get to get my swords out and fence my friends, but you know, just one of many hobbies. Uh-huh. So
no, that's great. So ICRPG, when did you, I guess we already know what grabbed you about it, but I saw this and that was it, or did it take a little bit to grab hold?
Well, I was actually like in the middle of trying to find my place in RPG. I guess I wanted to find what fit for me. I had some experience with my friend's homebrew stuff that wasn't really matching what I wanted. I dabbled in low fantasy gaming for a little bit with Castle Falkenstein, my own homebrew. And at that time, I was just searching for something. And I came across an article on Gnome Stew that talked about, hey, there's this visual resource, these index cards. They're great. You just lay them out and you tell your adventure through them and have them on the table. And something about the art really caught me. And I looked into it and I bought the first volume of index cards, just loved them. And I kept digging more and more and more. And slowly but surely it was, okay, here's the core book that I bought. Here's, you know, the world's book, the magic book. Okay, I'm now a patron of Runehammer. I'm watching Drunkens and Dragons. It just snowballed.
Yep.
From those little index cards.
Yeah. Well, they're so great for, you know, just not jogging, but igniting your imagination, I guess.
100%.
Yeah. It's hard. They're great. And that's, I guess that's, and we're doing a lot of talk about Hank here, but you know, that's the nice thing is it's not, you know, it's bullet points but everything, you know, it's good GM advice, but it's all things to spark your imagination. It's not any, it must be done this way and this, that. It's, hey, this is some cool stuff. Run with it.
Yeah.
And that's so great.
Yes.
Yeah.
I completely agree.
So folks, I'll put a link not only to the website, but I'm also going to put a link to one of the YouTube videos of a recent game that I was able to participate in. so you can check out and see how he runs games and all that kind of thing. And that was really interesting game. Now that uses a, now that system, I know that's not your system. Mm-hmm. The Waste is not kind. It's a post-apocalyptic hack for ICRPG. But that's still like a beta version, isn't it? Is he still working on that? You know.
Well, he's still working on it. I help with JD a lot. Me and him, mm-hmm. we bounce ideas back and forth, and so I got to see that Waste get built up and all the amazing stuff that JD's done mm-hmm. with it. And so he wanted to do the same thing: build a post-apocalyptic setting that sparked the imagination, but lets you DIY it. And so it's less of in a beta, but just more in a very open space. He's okay. working more projects for it. We're looking to start a campaign in it soon. So it's a growing world right alongside everything that's happening in the Runeverse.
Yeah, I really like that version. And it brought in I'm not good at research and writing down what I'm supposed to do before I say it. But it brings in a modified version of the adrenaline mechanic out of Altered State.
Yes.
Is it called Grit?
Grit.
Yeah.
Yeah. And for me, that is by far my favorite dice modification method, because for me, I just love how it's a community pool. We get to talk about when to use it. We know we want to really cheer for each other when we use it. We also get to kind of lament when it's gone. It's also, it doesn't guarantee successes. It allows you to push a little bit. And for me, I really like games where failure is still part of it, where uh-huh. it doesn't, I'm not always getting a success every turn. Everyone's always succeeding. I want to see that nat one. I want to see that failure, because it just brings out so many more interesting story elements as you react to those failures. And Grit allows you to push when you need, but it also leaves room for the other end of the spectrum.
Right, because even if you fail, you could use that grit to maybe absorb damage so you're mm-hmm. not killed or something like that.
Yeah.
So I guess that brings up another neat thing with ICRPG. Even I think the grit mechanic does help with that teamwork, but I've noticed ICRPG more so than some other games encourages teamwork. People tend to be much more of a, you know, now that's not saying people can't play, you know, with great teamwork in other role-playing games. Of course they can. But I don't know. Can you put your finger on that? I don't know if you've noticed that too, but you don't see lone wolf players so much in ICRPG games, which is interesting.
Yeah, I do feel the same way. What the exact cause of it, I'm also not sure. More than, I think it's just the simplicity of it. It allows everybody to interact in similar ways. Like you're not, yes, you have your role in the group, but you're also not limited to that. You don't feel boxed in. So it's like, hey, my friend is picking up some rocks and moving stuff. I'm not a strong character. I don't have a lot of strength, but I can go and help. I can contribute my effort to this mm-hmm. and that, and I can team up and tag team. And it really allows you to play with everybody rather than just playing at the same time as everybody.
I think that's a great way to put it. Yeah. And I wonder if, of course, different people play it differently, but I also wonder if the use of timers isn't part of that, because you know, since you've always got a clock ticking down, you can't just wait in one scene too long or wait in one place too long. You have to keep moving.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I mean, having that timer, like, okay, there's four of us and there's four rounds. If you do the math, that's everyone to get 16 actions, but those actions get spent up real quickly, and you got to make choices. And the best ICRPG games are the ones where you got 16 actions, but you really need 20 of them or 25 of them, but you don't have that time. You got to make choices, and you got to rely on your teammates to go and do their thing while you do this other thing. It's a combination that really promotes a lot of the stuff that I like in games.
I agree. It's and unfortunately, we're starting to get back to gaming in person and all. For the past couple of years, been a lot of online gaming due to various health concerns and all these kind of things, which ICRPG can adapt very well. We have the Runehammer VTT, which is excellent. It's a great lightweight VTT that gives you just what you need and not anything extra. Mm-hmm. and it's so easy. And Hank has been so good about release, and not just Hank, but everybody else supporting ICRPG. Typically, ICRPG products come with VTT packs and VTT, you know, support for those of us that aren't super artistic. So, you know, we can just plug and play and throw it on there, which is great. But, you know, what's interesting is I've done some Theater of the Mind ICRPG too. And actually, even though it's nice to be able to sit at the table with people and have physical props in front of you, it works just as well. Well, maybe it also works very well, Theater of the Mind, which is interesting.
Yeah.
You know, I'm in a Vigilante City game right now that we're doing Theater of the Mind, you know, just online. That's working well. Tomorrow I'm actually running a Colonial Gothic game that's going to end up being a Theater of the Mind game because it's going to be online with folks without great internet connection. So it's easier just to do voice, you know, than try to do visuals. So that's going to be based on Colonial Gothic, you know, just a kind of that setting.
Awesome. But,
yeah. That's a neat thing is it's such a versatile thing. You can do from Stone Age to post-apocalyptic, right? You can do everything.
Everything.
Yeah, it's very neat. So if you had to make for our creative-minded listeners out there, they're looking for craft channels. What kind of crafting channels? What inspires you? If you're looking for some inspiration, where do you go to find it?
That's a good one.
And it doesn't have to be a YouTube channel. It could be anything.
No, for sure. For a lot of things, I like to go for YouTube when I want to try to do something on the more like the physical terrain, the stuff like that. I, you know, watching Bard's Craft, I like, you know, Dungeon Craft is a great one. I'm trying to think of the other YouTubers that I follow along with. Stellarian Games, he has some great stuff visually. I'm not as into the craft just because I don't have a lot of space. Uh-huh. If you look around my office, I'm actually just piled up with boxes all the time, and that's just the way of it. But then for like art stuff, I love just perusing Instagram for various artists, Twitter for artist posts. I try to grab when I can, like concept art, coffee books. I've got like Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, like the art of books. And I just kind of like flip through those and just find some artists that I really like. I just look at them and just ideas start coming. It makes me more kind of open to those kind of ideas and those new worlds that could come out at the table.
I think that's great. Just find anything that inspires you and just roll with it. Definitely.
Yeah. Nothing too fancy. I mean, yeah, it's there's something about just art in general that there's a reason people like to look at it.
Mm-hmm. Well, the RPG hobby is interesting because you have game books and you have the groups and we play, but there's also a big part of the hobby that's just collecting the books and looking at the books and reading the books. Mm-hmm. And not every RPGer, but a lot of people in the hobby have, you know, big stacks of books they're never going to play, but they have them if only just to read or for inspiration.
And
we've seen you've always had art in RPG books, but I think more so in the past decade or two we've seen a lot more art book type, you know, books, whether it's a Free League stuff, whether it's Morkborg, whether it's whatever, but they're more, you know, or even Hank stuff, even ICRPG, the art's inspiring, but it's, you know, it's simple, but it's still very evocative, you know?
And, oh, for sure. And that evocative nature really, you know, draws, at least for me, it draws me in, and it like, they just say, don't judge a book by its cover. But I got to tell you, if you see something that just looks good, like, I'm very interested by it if it catches the eye, and I can't blame them for trying to do that to get my dollars that way.
Right. Well, you know, it's a tough market. You know, they say it's the golden age of RPGs, and you can get, you know, books have been out of production for years and years and years, are available as PDF now, and we have more games available than ever, and new games are coming all the time. So it's a tough market, and people have to do what they can do to get attention. And that's where you get some of this stuff from, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. So I've got a friend who does a podcast called the Red Caps Podcast. Kevin, he's up in Canada. He's doing Thanksgiving today, actually, because it's Canadian Thanksgiving. But he, like, at the end of his interviews, he likes to ask, what question should I ask you? When you're in one of the, when somebody's asking you questions or interviewing you, what question did they never ask that you wish they asked? And I think that's such a great question. So I'm going to throw that at you.
That is a really good question to ask. And
Or what question do you not see asked very often that you wish people would ask people on interviews?
Well, I think it's a good question when you kind of get stumped, but I think a lot of the times we forget to ask just more about, you know, there's opinions and thoughts about the person behind the screen. You know, I think what I really like about the hobby is the fact that when you sit down at the table, whether it's online or not, you get a closeness to people. It's something that brings us together, and eventually you get to the point where you make friends and you learn about them personally, and then you care about them personally, and it's more than just a game, it's a friendship. So I think like in interviews, we get kind of focused on the what's of what we're doing and rather not the who's of what we're doing or who's of we're talking to.
Mm-hmm. No, I think that's a good point.
For me, it's like, I've known you as a name on Discord for a long, long time, but I want to get to know you better.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think we all, like you say, we do that through our groups, and it's interesting the way that Discord and social media and even gaming works. And I have to admit, in the groups I'm in that I do play with regularly, even though most of us I've met a couple of them in real life, but most of us, we only met over the internet. We still spend half an hour before the game just catching up and talking and how's so-and-so, how's your wife doing this, that, you know, or talk about what happened that week or so we, you know, we have built those friendships and on it. And I think that's a good point.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I know some people are kind of hesitant to talk a whole lot about, you know, regular life on media, depending what it is, you know, privacy issues and all. But for the most part, I think once you get into your gaming group, some of that falls away.
No, for sure. And so I guess to, you know, come back to your question is like, what questions do you wish I would have asked? You know, it is a tough one. What kind of personal questions do you ask to get to know someone without impeding on that sense of privacy or whatever? But I can tell you for me that it's just, I feel like somebody who's just, I go every day, I'm a family man that plays games and enjoys them. Not because I feel like they're, you know, just because I like the interaction with people. I like to play games. We play board games, we play RPGs, you know, all sorts of things, just because getting together at a table is a great campfire to gather around.
I couldn't agree with that more. That's something my son and I, we love board games. You know, we've got, my wife wishes we didn't have so many board games, you know, we've got the games and I'm the same way. I'm a social gamer. I have certain rule sets I enjoy more than others, but I'll pretty much play anything because I'm more interested in the social aspect of the hobby. I'm more interested in interacting with people and playing the games than I am the rule sets. Yeah. Depending, but for the most part, it's a social part that draws me to this hobby for sure.
Same here.
Well, I appreciate it. I don't want to cut in too much of your time, but I thank you so much for taking the time to join me today.
Of course. I'm happy to chat. And again, getting to chat with you and get to know you better is always really good for me. And we can chat again.
Yeah. So Runehammer has a Discord. People can join. It's pretty easy to find the way to do that. So let me ask you this. We'll do the closing question. If somebody's listening to this is interested in ICRPG, I mean, of course they can reach out to me and I'll help them get involved. But if for whatever reason they want to be independent, what ways would you recommend people reach out, or what can they look to? What other communities other than the Discord have you found that work really well?
I think the forums are probably the best examples of those things. The Discord is great. It's very high paced because it's just so instantaneous. There's so many people in there chattering all the time. There's, you know, the official Runehammer Discord. There's the ICRPG Communities Discord, which is for non-patrons or patrons. It's just, you don't have to be a Runehammer patron to get on that one, which is great. The forums are open to everybody. The biggest thing that I think is for anybody who's interested in ICRPG is to get into those communities and just participate. For a while I was on the forums and I was a lurker. I would just chime in every now and then. And then there was a call out from one of the shields that just says, "Hey, it's gotten quiet. Let's do stuff. Let's share what we've got." And it really spurred me to action to participate more and to be a better citizen of the community. And so the best way to get into ICRPG is find some fellow shields, start talking, participate, try it out, don't overthink it, and just play. And you'll find yourself in a way better position and a way better understanding than you'd ever do just reading the book or chat, thinking about it.
Yeah, I agree with that too. These games, a lot of these books are super well written, but it's always better to learn it from the group. Mm-hmm. Get in the game, play the game, definitely read the books, but you know, you can learn so much that's unsaid wisdom that, you know, not written in the book, but it's, you know, community wisdom, right?
Yeah.
So, okay. Well, thank you very much. I look forward to talking to you soon. Who knows if special projects come up or just, you know, who knows why, maybe we'll get you on again sometime.
I'm happy to. Anytime. Thanks, Jason.
Who's on the phone? Who's on the phone? Who's on the phone? Who's on the phone? Well, maybe it's your auntie or a joke about your spouse, but the operator's scream is coming from inside the house.
Hey, Jason, this is Joe from the Decahedron Podcast. Just heard you talking about the Munsters movie by Rob Zombie. I gave that a try and I could not even get like more than a half hour into it. Just not my thing. I did try. I was never a fan of the Munsters, and maybe that's the problem. I always, even as like a preteen when I was watching them, I always thought that the Munsters was a base imitation of the Addams Family. And I always thought that the Addams Family was far superior, far funnier, far better in every way I could imagine. And if you ask me why, I can't tell you. I don't know. But I mean, I never hated the Munsters, and if nothing else was on, I could watch it. So I gave the movie a try, just couldn't get into it. Thanks for the recommendation though. Bye.
Thank you for the call. As far as the Decahedron Podcast, folks, go check that out. There's a link in the show notes, Decahedron RPG Podcasting. Find it on all your favorite podcatchers. It's pretty great. Joe and his buddy James are talking about things. They only have a few episodes out now, 4 at time of recording, but they're all pretty interesting conversations, and they're really short episodes, which is nice. And it looks like they're making a concerted effort to keep them short, you know, which is a nice change of pace from listening to my show. As far as the Munsters, that was I watched it so you don't have to. It wasn't so much a recommendation. Yeah, if you didn't like the show, there's no way you would like the movie. There's no question about it. Now, that same thing is going to apply to the movies I'm going to talk about here in a little bit. I'm not necessarily recommending all of them. Some of these I'm going to recommend, but it's very much going to depend on your taste, because Folk Horror is not everybody's cup of tea, nor some of the other things I watch. But anyway, thank you for the kind call. I do appreciate it, and I'm sorry that you subjected yourself to part of the Munsters there. In addition to that voice message, Joe also went on in an email, and I got permission from him, so I'm going to read that to you. He notes that while he does praise the Addams Family, he wants to make it very clear that it's just for the TV show, not for the movies. And the other thing he mentions that I think is well worth talking about is his opinion on Hollywood logic. Why Batgirl might have been shelved, and he felt that Warner Brothers might have felt the Batgirl movie would damage the franchise, where because there's no modern Munsters franchise, there's nothing to damage. Additionally, just like Sony contractually had to keep making Fantastic Four movies just to retain the rights, maybe there was some sort of contractual reason for Universal to make the new Munster content. And that very well might be true. Maybe they had to make it to retain the Munsters, and then they just sold it off to Netflix. I'm not sure. Joe goes on to say that he personally would love to see Michael Keaton come back as an elderly Bruce Wayne in a live-action version of Batman Beyond animated series. And I agree with that. Batman Beyond. So back in the 90s, and I've talked about Batman the Animated Series and the DC Animated Universe before. That's my idealized version of the DC Universe, really. The Batman Animated Series, Superman the Animated Series, the Justice League that they did, Batman Beyond. And Batman Beyond is really cool. And there's some other shows in there, like Static Shock and the Zeta Project. But Batman Beyond is really cool. It's an elderly Bruce Wayne, and he has this fancy suit that he passes on to Terry Terry Gillis? Anyway, Terry Gillis and the Little People, right? But he passes it on, and I'm not going to ruin it. You should watch it. There are some twists and turns in there, and we see some kind of unsavory things from the past, and fun favorites come back, but it's a future Gotham, and, you know, so some of the villains are reimagined, and different things happen, and it's really, really well done. It's not just a kid show. Batman Beyond is a really neat show, and it's well worth watching. If you have HBO Max, you can watch it on there. I'm pretty sure they should have it on there, and yeah, I agree with Joe here. I think it's pretty great. Batman Beyond is a pretty great show, so. Anyway, Joe, thank you for all those comments. I really appreciate it. And now we're going to move on to our next caller.
Hey, Jason. James Knight calling from London in the UK. I hope you're well. I'm just calling up to send some follow-up thoughts to your excellent System Sunday episode on Sabres and Witchery, episode 410, I think. As an Englishman with a penchant for folk horror, my ears perked up with some of the references, and I wholeheartedly agree that the soundtrack to Blood on Satan's Claw is excellent. It's composed by a guy called Mark Wilkinson, who actually sadly passed away in January of this year. But there is a reissue of the soundtrack that came out in 2007 on Trunk Records, which is a great label run by an eccentric guy called Johnny Trunk over here in the UK. Who I've had the pleasure of meeting at various record conventions. But the 2007 reissue I can recommend because the liner notes are really cool. So even if you want to download the tracks, if you can pick up either the CD or vinyl reissue, the liner notes are really awesome. And the other movie in that genre that I'm a big fan of, that often gets overlooked in these discussions where people often mention The Wicker Man and Blood on Satan's Claw and Witchfinder General, is The Ballad of Tam Lin, which I believe in the States was released as The Devil's Widow. A lot of people in the UK will be very familiar with The Ballad of Tam Lin because the folk rock group Fairport Convention, who had a quite big record in 1969 with Legion Leaf, where they set a lot of kind of English folk tales to music, they had a track that was about Tam Lin. But the film is awesome. It's directed by, or at least I think it's awesome, in my opinion. It's directed by Roddy McDowall, who people may know due to his involvement with the Planet of the Apes franchise. And it stars Ian McShane, who people will probably know from Deadwood and American Gods. Although as a fan of English TV of the 80s and 90s, Jason, you may well know Ian McShane as Lovejoy. He was a wheeler, dealer, wide boy, antiques dealer. And Lovejoy was kind of a legendary Sunday evening show here in the UK in the late 80s, early 90s. And one of the reasons I thought of Tam Lin, beyond the fact I think it's a good example of the folk horror genre, is it recently got reissued by the British Film Institute here in the UK. They've done a restoration, remaster, reissue. And I know you've got a region-free Blu-ray DVD player, Jason. So that's one that you could definitely potentially pick up. And the only other thing I wanted to mention in that genre is a much more modern director Ben Wheatley, who people may know from his Ballard adaptation High Rise. He's released two films that I think fit really well into this genre. One is A Field in England, which came out in 2013, which is really cool. It's difficult to describe. It's kind of like a folk horror set literally in a field in England during the Civil War, where, without giving too much of the plot away, some soldiers eat some mushrooms and things occur. I highly recommend it. And again, it has an excellent soundtrack, more in the sound design vein than the song vein, but the soundtrack is, yeah, it's trippy. And he has a much more recent film. I forget the year. It must have come out within the last sort of 10, certainly within the last 2 years, I'd say. It's called In the Earth, which again is a kind of like a folk horror. And those two films have actually inspired an RPG game by Chris Bissett, who people may know from his blog Loot the Room. He released a kind of rules-light zine game called Feast that was inspired directly in the notes to the game by A Field in England and In the Earth. So I recommend checking out those movies, and I have a copy of the game. It's cool. Not had a chance to play it yet, but I love the inspiration, and the game is cool. So anyway, take care, Jason. I'll speak to you soon. Take care. Bye.
And remember, folks, if you sent a call in to Jason and you haven't heard it on this episode, have no fear. It will appear.
James, thank you for that call. And you've done a great job of introducing my movie section. I'm on a big folk horror kick right now. And, you know, your call really goes into that. So Blood on Satan's Claw is a movie I watched. Really great movie. Highly, highly recommended, folks. If you like folk horror, it's got some nudity in there. Be aware of that. It's got an amazing soundtrack. So what I have ordered that, I watched it and ordered the, there's a special Blu-ray release that includes the CD, audio CD of the soundtrack. It should be arriving here in a day or two. So I'm not sure if that's going to have the liner notes or not. If not, I might have to buy the LP to get the liner notes. The CDs and all, everything's sold out for this. It's really popular. I hope over at Trunk Records, they produce more. You can get the audio MP3s for it, of course, but the only thing I can find at a reasonable price are the LPs at the moment, and I don't have a record player anymore, which is sad to say. And even the movie goes for a lot of money. But you can find it streaming online, and I highly recommend it. Check it out. It's a great, great folk horror movie. As far as Tam Lin, funny enough, the day before James called in, I watched The Ballad of Tam Lin, as it's called over here in the States. And I've also got the Blu-ray for that I ordered that arrived yesterday. And Tam Lin is amazing. We have Ava Gardner. We have Ian McShane. Roddy McDowall missed making Beneath the Planet of the Apes, the only of the original five movies that he's not in, because he was directing this movie. And he does an awesome job directing this movie. It's really well done. It's a great, the music is by Pentacle. If you don't know them, I'll put a link so you can listen to some of their stuff on YouTube. Pentacle is a really amazing band that should be better known than it is. And they do the music for it. It great, great music soundtrack. And it's just a fairy tale. The queen of the elves or the queen of the fairies comes and is playing with mortals. And that's what the movie's about. And it's a really, really well done. And it's a shame this movie, it was shelved for a couple years. And then when it got back on, I watched an interview with a cinematographer, a director of photography, I think, for the movie. And because he talked about how he was lighting Ava Gardner and stuff. And he was also talking about how the clothes were actually out of fashion because they had shelved it for a few years. But it deserves to be better known. There's some other famous people in Tam Lin as well. We have Jonah Lumley, we have Stephanie Beecham, and of course, Bruce Robinson's in it, who most people will know because he wrote and directed With Nail and Eye. So that's kind of cool. Now, the Ben Wheatley stuff that he talks about, A Field in England and Into the Earth. I've seen A Field in England, great movie. Into the Earth, I've not seen. I do plan on seeing that. If you want to hear about the RPG mentioned, Feast, Spencer over Keep Off the Borderland talks about that on his show. So go check out Keep Off the Borderland. I will actually pause this and look up the episode number for you. Okay, it was the October 2nd episode of Keep Off the Borderlands, Please Do Not Bend, Cthulhu Dark, Orc Borg, and Feast, episode 207. So go check that out. Great episode, as always, by Spencer, also known as Free Thrall. a big supporter of Keep Off the Borderland. Spencer's a great guy. And so he talks about the Game Feast over there. I don't own the Game Feast, so I can't answer that. But maybe that's something I will fix in the future. So what other movies have I watched? Well, I watched Beast of the Yellow Night, which is a Filipino horror movie. It's actually one of the better done ones. It has a pretty interesting plot where we see our good buddy Vic Diaz come. He gets to play Satan in this, and he, you know, steals a guy makes a deal with him, and then the guy regrets the deal with him, right? Your typical Faustian thing. Pretty neat movie. When the guy goes against Satan turns him into this kind of murderous beast, and you have to go watch it. Beast of the Yellow Night, Filipino movie. Now, it's a 60s Filipino movie, so if you watch those, you know what kind of quality you're looking at. And I don't mean that in a negative to the Philippines or the filmmakers over there, but I mean, compared to American movie, it's kind of rough. And so just be aware of that. But I mean, I enjoy them. I watched Dark Knight of the Scarecrow, which is a TV movie here in the States. I talked about that a little bit on a previous show, so I'm not going to go into that, but it's kind of a neat little movie. Lawnmower Man 2, Beyond Cyberspace. So all these movies, in theory, were marked horror. Lawnmower Man 2 is not a horror movie at all. It's a sci-fi adventure movie, I guess. Although it is horrific that Matt Frewer, I think that's how you say his name, who we all know from Max Headroom fame, Max Frewer comes and turns Job into a Max Headroom knockoff in this movie. Lawnmower Man 2, Beyond Cyberspace, unless you really just want to laugh at a movie, is well worth avoiding. Return to Salem's Lot. This one, actually, I'm going to recommend. Now, Return from Salem's Lot has nothing to do with it. So this is a... How do I describe Return from Salem's Lot as the phone rings behind me? Return to Salem's Lot is not based on Stephen King other than the Vegas senses, right? This movie is done by Larry Cohen. And if you know Larry Cohen, Cue the Winged Serpent, stuff, all kinds of great stuff. Return to Salem's Lot is like Larry Cohen kind of read and kind of remembered Salem's Lot and thought it was boring, so he decided to make his own version. And it's pretty great. It's really a send-up of American conservatism values and things like that, and the idea of, you know, entitlement and things like that, more than a vampire movie. But it's Michael Moriarty's in there. He's always great. Sam Fuller's in there. Sam Fuller, famous director. You should know who Sam Fuller is. I've talked about him before. You should go watch his movies. The Big Red one, of course, is the most commercially normal of his movies, but like Steel Helmet, White Dog. Sam Fuller is an amazing guy. Of course, he's passed now, but amazing guy. He plays a Nazi killer in this movie. I'll play a clip when I get done talking here in a second. Sam Fuller makes this movie. This is a B movie. It's not, you know, it's not great. It doesn't make a lot of sense. This is a so bad it's good kind of movie, right? So you check it out, and if you're thinking about checking out, wait till you see Sam Fuller. He looks like Albert Einstein. And he makes this movie. He is so great as this Nazi killer that comes, finds himself in this town of vampires. Of course, Michael Moriarty is always chewing up the scenery. In fact, we open up with Michael Moriarty filming this, you know, human sacrifice thing in the jungles of Central America somewhere, you know, and he's like, anyway, there's all these themes that Larry Cohen kind of ham-fistedly sews in the movie, but really it's a so bad it's good movie. I can't recommend Return to Salem's Lot enough on the so bad it's good category, okay? Here, listen to this clip.
We still got the constable and the rest of those hybrids to deal with.
I'm used to dealing with those son of a bitches that made a deal with the devil. You see that? Picked us off a goddamn SS colonel hiding in Argentina. 52.
How many of those did you arrest?
None. When I find them, I shoot them.
That cuts through all the red tape.
I'm not a Nazi hunter. I'm a Nazi killer.
Fuller really chews the scenery in this movie, really makes it worth watching. Again, is the so bad it's good kind of movie. What else have I watched? I watched Monster Dog. This is another one I bought the DVD for. Monster Dog is a Spanish film, and it's the only film Alice Cooper ever was a lead role in. Alice Cooper is the lead role in this horror movie about werewolves, and it's pretty great. It was done in Spanish, so the English is dubbed over, and they don't even use Alice Cooper's voice to dub over Alice Cooper's character. He's horrible act. This is another so bad it's good. Horrible acting throughout. The monster effects are ludicrously bad. Alice Cooper is the best thing in this movie. There's two music videos he does in this movie, and they're songs that weren't released for like 2 decades after the movie. They're finally released like in 2000, I think. But Identity Crises and something else. But check it out. Monster Dog is silly fun with Alice Cooper. And how can you not love Alice Cooper? Cat People I talked about with Ray Otis. Cat Girl I talked about with Ray Otis on a previous episode. Werewolf by Night. This is on Disney Plus. This is Marvel Universe. The character Werewolf by Night, Jack Russell. And we also spoilers for this, Man-Thing shows up. Those are the only two characters. Oh, Alyssa Bloodstone also shows up. If you're not into comics, you're not going to know who any of these things are. If you read the comics, you'll recognize some of these references. There are a lot of other characters are in the comics. It's pretty short. It's like maybe an hour, 45 minutes or an hour. It's just campy fun. It's take up a like Hammer horror movies and stuff. It's all in black. It's not all in black and white, but it's mostly black and white. It's like the bloodstone is red. It's a Smith's artifact. So it has a red light that glows and stuff in the black and white movie. But it's really fun. I do recommend Werewolf by Night. Blood on Satan's Claw, we've talked about. Ballad of Tam Lin, I talked about. Other kind of folk horror. Well, not folk horror. Well, I guess folk horror. So, well, I'm working through some other stuff right now. Let's talk about another TV movie, Satan's Triangle. Satan's Triangle is a neat movie about the Bermuda's Triangle and what might have happened. We follow a Coast Guard rescue chopper and their crew as they find this sailboat with a bunch of dead bodies on it. Satan's Triangle, it's only like an hour, or maybe it's an hour and a half. But anyway, it's TV made for TV movie, but I do recommend it. Really good. Another TV movie that was labeled as horror that's really not horror, it's a thriller, is The California Kid. Martin Sheen goes up against Vic Morrow. Vic Morrow, I've talked about before, great, great character actor, died in the Vietnam sequence for Twilight Zone, the movie, trying to, you know, with the kids. But The California Kid, Vic Morrow is a sheriff who doesn't like speeders, and Martin Sheen comes to get justice against him with a great customized 34 Ford. The California Kid's fun, a fun movie. It's not a horror movie, though. The Stone Tape I watched. I've been watching some British stuff. The Stone Tape is a movie you should watch. You can watch on YouTube. The Stone Tape is the basis for so many famous things. It's incredible how these things, you know, get hold. But the Stone Tape, the idea that the poltergeists are a recording of an event that's locked in a location, that doesn't totally come from the Stone Tape theory. But that theory is called the Stone Tape theory mostly because of this British show by Nigel Neal. I might be saying that wrong. K-N-E-A-L-E. Real famous guy, did a lot of things, a lot of great things. Quartermass. You know, Quartermass, that's Nigel's work. Nigel famously doesn't like Doctor Who, though. he's passed now. But Nigel Neal, or I guess that's how you say his name, really great screenwriter. The Stone Tape, I can't recommend it enough. And it's super influential in, you know, it influenced John Carpenter. We see the influence in like Prince of Darkness and Halloween 3. It influenced Steven Spielberg and Tobe Hooper for Poltergeist. There's so many, you know, Grant Morrison was influenced by the Stone Tape and talks about it. You know, it's got a lot of culture influence. It really brought the idea of a residual haunting in the public eye and really helped solidify that idea. Highly, highly, highly recommend The Stone Tape. Great, great show. I think it still stands up. I've been watching in England, they had the BBC did a thing called A Ghost Story for Christmas between 71 and 78. And I know they've started doing it again sporadically since 2005. But on BBC One, between 71 and 78, every year on Christmas Eve, they would show a ghost story. And again, these are made for TV, but they're still really good. And so the first two are adaptations of M.R. James stories, The Stalls of Barchester and A Warning to the Curious. And interestingly, they share a character that Clive Swift plays Mr. Black, which is kind of interesting. But I do recommend, you can find all of them on YouTube. I recommend going and checking those out, A Ghost Story for Christmas. Really neat little horror stories that they're pretty fun. What else do we have here? I've been rewatching some old Hammer classics. If you go to HBO Max right now, and I'm talking to viewers in the States, they have The Horror of Dracula, The Curse of Frankenstein, The Mummy on there. So these are all, well, so The Mummy is not as, obviously the effects are maybe, now even the effects. The Mummy is not as good as the Universal Mummy. So Hammer Horror decided to remake the Universal Monsters and put their spin on them. The Mummy is the least imaginative of these. And I think the Universal version of The Mummy is superior. Karloff's in The Mummy is great. But I think The Mummy, this 1959 version of The Mummy, is worth watching still. The Hammer one, go watch it. I don't think you're wasting your time. Of course, you have Christopher Lee and Peter Cushing. Peter Cushing's the hero and Christopher Lee's the mummy. But it's not as good as the Universal one. But when we look at these others, I'm not going to say they're better than the Universal ones, but they take very different twists, and that's what makes them interesting. So Curse of Frankenstein, you know, Victor Frankenstein is, played by Peter Cushing, is nowhere near the sympathetic figure he is in the Universal Monster movies. That I'm brain farting his name. But the actor that played, Dr. Frankenstein and Curse of Frankenstein's a right bastard. Well worth watching. Horror of Dracula is very interesting. Again, we have Peter Cushing, and in both these, Christopher Lee's the vampire and Christopher Lee's the Frankenstein's monster. But in Horror of Dracula, when Jack Harper, or Harker, it switches things up. Harker shows up to Dracula's home for a very different reason in Horror of Dracula. That's all I'm going to say. It's a very interesting twist on the story. The only thing that's weird in Horror Dracula is the geography doesn't make sense to me. Maybe I missed something, but it's like at first he's in Transylvania and then Dracula's whole castle's transported to England at the end of the movie. I don't know quite how that works. Maybe somebody can call in and explain the geography of Horror Dracula to me, but great movie. Peter Cushing's in there as Van Helsing, well worth watching. And they would reprise these roles. So they only made the one Mummy movie, I think, but they made a bunch of Dracula movies. And Peter Cushing's continuing to be the vampire hunter, and Christopher Lee's the vampire. And they have a number of movies in that setting, and then they bring it to the modern setting. Well, the 70s at least, which is even better than today, right? Which is really great. And they also did that with the Frankenstein movies. There are a number of movies where Peter Cushing comes back as Victor Frankenstein. And they even bring that to the modern day with Frankenstein 1970. So I think these Hammer movies are really fun takes on the genre, really well worth watching. The other one I watched was Dr. Jekyll and Sister Hyde from 71. This is a Hammer movie. And Dr. Jekyll and Sister Hyde, of course, when he turns into Hyde, it turns into a woman because he's using female hormones to try to find the elixir of life. And it's a really interesting take, and it's not the exploitation take you would think it would be. So it's not as bad as it could be. And actually, it's a really neat take on it. They pick the actors really well. It's believable that Dr. Jekyll turned into Sister Hyde when you look at their faces and stuff. I actually highly recommend that movie. It's a really neat take on the Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde story. The other one I watched that isn't part of a series, it's kind of a horror movie, not really. It really belongs last month with our talk about pirates, is Captain Clegg, where Peter Cushing plays the pirate Captain Clegg, who's kind of retired into a town, but they're still smuggling, you know, and then, yeah, the British trying to catch them. Pretty fun movie, Captain Clegg, also known as Night Creatures in the States. I do recommend that one as well. So I guess the only other one I want to talk about is this one. Mowing down bands with my best friend, but this is another Netflix movie. This is Jamie Foxx and Snoop Dogg in Day Shift. This is a fun take. I liken this to John Carpenter's vampires. Instead of working for the church, they're part of a vampire hunting union. But it hits a lot of the same beats. It's more lighthearted than John Carpenter's vampires is, but it would make a great day. If you wanted to do a back-to-back vampire hunter marathon, you know, do a double feature. I think John Carpenter's Vampires and Day Shift would go very well together. Day Shift has some funny moments. It's silly fun. I mean, don't think about it too hard, but Day Shift could very easily be turned into a RPG. Check out Day Shift. I do highly recommend it. Silly fun. But if you like John Carpenter's Vampires and you want to see a little bit lighter take on it, Day Shift is the way to go. I think that's mostly what I watched. I might have skipped a movie or two, but that's most of what I watched so far this month. That's plenty for me to talk about. This episode's getting really long. I just want to remind you about our sci-fi horror contest. Call in. Let me know your favorite sci-fi horror property, movie, book, anime, RPG, whatever. And you have to get that entry in by the 28th of October. This contest is being sponsored by The Geomologist Presents, and they are offering a number of traveler books as a reward. We'll mail them to you anywhere in the world. So you have that. We talked about it in an earlier episode. I don't have room in the show notes today, actually, to list the books, but you can go back to an early episode and hear all the books that we're offering that we're going to be mailing to the winner. And I'll also get with the winner and we'll donate money to a charity. So there's, you know, plus plus. If you want to call into my show and talk about anything, you want to enter the contest, you want to talk about anything we talked about today, talk about anything we haven't talked about today, you can go to the Anchor website, leave a message there. You can, if you're in the U.S., I have a Google Voice number you can call. If you're in the U.S. or overseas, I have a SpeakPipe account. You can call into SpeakPipe. If you're on Discord, I'm on a variety of Discord channels. You can send me a direct message on Discord, or you can send an email to nerdsrpgvarietycast@gmail.com. Attach an audio file. I'll play it on the air and make you famous. All these things are in the show notes, so don't worry about writing anything down. Just go to the show notes. All the ways to reach me are there. But send me an entry for the contest. Reach out. Let me know what you think about anything else. I love hearing from guests. I love getting listener mail. And with that, this show has gone very long, so I'm going to cut it off. But remember, be excellent to one another.
Your auntie or a joke about your spouse, but the operator's screaming it's coming from inside the house. What's in the box? What's in the box? What's in the box? What's in the box? Well, the audience is pretty sure he took a pretty head, and the only question left is if I could shoot him dead. Bring on the gore, bring on the gore. Butcher is a dice man and oil is by a tipper, and I'm assuming that your partner back there in the wood chipper. Don't look away, don't look away, don't look away, don't look away. Well, the zombies are arising and the world has gone to heck. We're living for the dying and we're dying for the train wreck.